The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So today Downing Street is battling off the travel industry yet again, because there's even more confusion coming on from the Amber Plus list. Katie, can you update us on the latest? We talked last week about France, but somehow the story just won't end.
Yes, so this all relates to a COVID meeting last week about travel restrictions. And there is talk of a new category. So there's been Amber Plus, and there could be an Amber watch list. And I think this hasn't gone as intended, but I get the impression from those involved that they thought this might make things simpler. The idea being that when you're booking a holiday, it could be on the Amber list, it could be on the green list. Perhaps you access the Amber list at some point, but you'd be able to see ultimately whether or not it was likely to move to something very drastic like red, Amber Plus, by which you can't skip quarantine even if you're double jabbed, because they're placed on an Amber watch list. And that would probably indicate that you say you're on holiday in Greece and Greece gets moved to Amber watch list. Maybe you have a week or two, but not to book too far in advance, plan too far in advance. But it's not been read as a simpler option. Instead, it's been read as another category in the increasingly confusing and complicated world of foreign travel. And It's a funny one, because I think we're seeing cabinet divisions over it. We're also seeing Tory backbenchers speaking out. And I think it still comes back to an issue which I don't think has been resolved, which is there is disagreement within government as to whether or not domestic freedoms must be prioritised at the expense of international travel. And I don't think anyone has come up with an answer to that, of which there is full agreement. And so we can see it rearing its head in all these discussions. I think we're hearing scientific advisers today saying, you know, really, you shouldn't go on a foreign holiday unless you really have to, unless you have family to see. But yet we're hearing conflicting things. There are cabinet ministers, including Rishi Sunak. There's a letter published over the weekend, or reports that he sent a letter to the Prime Minister about foreign travel, urging for more easings. I think on that letter, it's been framed very much in the timeline of Amber Plus and Amber watch list, but there are a few different accounts of that, and a suggestion that it was more in relation to quarantine. That letter is, you know, older. So there's attempts to play it down as being specifically to do with this issue. But what I think it does point to either way is the fact there are a group of ministers who do think travel should be relaxed. And perhaps now with Matt Hancock, who was formerly probably the most vocal in saying that you shouldn't relax international travel, gone, that group are the loudest.
James, do you think the government is going to have to U-turn, as it were, on this Amber Plus list because it's simply too confusing? And also some of the countries that are now being suggested on there, not just France, but also maybe later this week, Italy, Greece and Spain, which are, you know, the top destinations for Brits as holidays go.
Yeah, I think any list that includes Italy, Greece, Spain, France is going to ring some political alarm bells. Interestingly, I got a text from a Tory MP on Friday night saying that, you know, this is going to be a very difficult month for the government. And I said kind of about August. And I said kind of why? Because in some ways, the reopening, I think, has gone more smoothly than we expected. I think if I had said to you on this podcast on July the 19th, made a kind of prediction that, you know, cases would be substantially, you know, the rate of number of new infections would be substantially down, that would have seemed a very bold thing to have said. But, it, you know, the reopening has gone better than any of the models have suggested. But I think foreign travel is one of those areas where it just becomes very apparent to people how far we still are away from the status quo ante, from normality. And I think there are lots of tricky things. There is the question about whether places move from, you know, green to amber plus to red. There's the fact that, you know, another tension I think you're going to find is that in some countries they're vaccinating teenagers. So families are going abroad and finding out that, you know, people over the age of 12 can't go into a place unless they're vaccinated, but we're not vaccinating teenagers, so British teenagers couldn't go in. And so I think it's sort of, and also I think the other point is, travel has become very, you know, we've got so used to travel being so easy and convenient, you know, the easy jet generation and all that. It has now become very stressful and confusing. PCR tests here, there, everywhere, on departure, on return. And so I think that people's irritation at that is growing. But the government, as Katie was saying, still feels this pressure, which is, you know, the warning about the variant that might derail the program, which is what led to France being placed on this Amber Plus list. Now, there does appear to be some confusion about whether this was in Reunion or mainland France, but still a mistake. I think for the moment, the government could probably be relatively relaxed about variants because Delta is so infectious that I don't think any of the known variants that are currently out there are going to outcompete it anywhere. That obviously doesn't mean that you couldn't get a new variant that you need to guard against, but in terms of the current variants in circulation in Europe, it seems odd. I think Delta is still listed as a variant of concern when it makes up the vast majority of the cases in this country. We already have it here. So I think that is a tension that will carry on. I also think that, you know, again, another thing that is going to cause the government difficulties, not directly holidays, but holiday related, is that I think a lot of people are taking a strategy of, if they are going abroad, they are essentially going into self-isolation for 10 days before their holiday to avoid getting pinged by the app. You know, obviously on the 16th of April, that changes where people who've been double vaccinated would only need to take a test. So I think that the combination of the unpredictability of the travel advice and, you know, the dangers that your holiday could get derailed at the last minute means that for that minority, we should say it's a minority of the population who take foreign holidays, but people are crotchety with the government for understandable reasons.
And Katie, politically, on that letter that you mentioned from Rishi Sunak, which was the Sunday Times' front page yesterday, where does that leave the Rishi Sunak team that letter was given such prominence by the Sunday Times? I mean, is it awkward for the Chancellor and the Prime Minister to have such a public differencing opinion on this?
Well, I think it is awkward, but I think that's why both sides are attempting to play it down in terms of, you know, this letter, look at the date and all this and so forth. So I think things like that are difficult because there's... Well, I mean, I think if we look at the history of relationships between Chancellor and Prime Minister, we know they can be very strained, and it also inevitably becomes talk of leadership rivalry and successes. And I think Number 11 are very keen to try and avoid those types of stories. But it is going to be a big theme heading into the autumn with the spending review, the fact that Rishi Sunak and Boris Johnson are in different places in terms of how much they would like to spend, I think. And I think probably bad timing for Rishi Sunak is that we've also just had our latest round of Conservative home polls of the Tory rank and file, the membership, and they've done the first next Tory leader survey in 2 years, and Rishi Sunak is on top, which I think when people start to say, oh, is he on manoeuvres, is that why this letter has been sent, it's probably not what you want within 24 hours of that if you are someone doing comms for the Chancellor. And then I think that I think when you're looking at actually the latest Conservative home polls, I think the one that has far more reason to worry Boris Johnson isn't related directly to Rishi Sunak, because we can talk about Tory leadership speculation. Ultimately, Boris Johnson is not going anywhere anytime soon. I think it's still seen as a more likely scenario that he leads the party into the next election. But instead, I think it's the Cabinet League table, which is the monthly poll they do, and Boris Johnson has dropped 36 points. So he's now, I think, around 3 points in terms of net satisfaction, which means he's very low down in that table. So top of it is Liz Truss, the International Trade Secretary, then Rishi Sunak, then Dominic Raab. And the only people who are more unpopular or lower net satisfaction than Boris Johnson and Robert Jenrick, Amanda Milling and Gavin Williamson in terms of the Cabinet. I think this comes at a time when we've seen a pattern in the polls begin to emerge with the gap between the Tories and Labour narrowing, and also Boris Johnson's personal approval ratings with the public going down. And therefore, I do think this is less of a blip, and it does give Number 10 pause for thought.
James, what did you make of these rankings? Because for Boris Johnson, party membership was, I understand it, part of the reason for his popularity, for his leadership, rather than the parliamentary party. So for him, party membership is quite an important support base.
Yeah, and these con home numbers, they do move around. I mean, people's opinion do go up of him, go up and down. I think this is the first survey since, first of all, his attempt to avoid self-isolation, which I think didn't go down well. I think, secondly, there is a substantial chunk of the Tory membership that don't like the idea of vaccine passports, something that Boris Johnson has committed to introducing at the very least for nightclubs from September. And then third, I think there is this kind of tension about that things are still not back to normal. Obviously, in some ways, that is a result of the pandemic. But, you know, those issues relating to foreign travel, the pandemic, all those things that we were talking about. And I think the government has a problem, which, you know, we discussed in this podcast before, which is at the time of the Hartlepool election in May, when it was, you know, when it won that election, turned in good results in the English local elections, it had a very clear message, which is, you know, it had got onto vaccines early, and these vaccines were what was enabling society to open up again. I think those delay to reopening, although the public were supportive of that, it denied the government a message. And I think you saw that in Batley and Spen and Chesham and Amersham, when the government wasn't quite sure what to say. And I think the government is still not yet got its kind of clear message. And now, obviously, if its reopening continues to go well, that will enable it to move on to kind of post-COVID politics in the way it clearly does. Look at the attempt to get people talking about crime last week. I think that one of the challenges for this government is that the aftermath of COVID will be difficult to deal with politically. These backlogs, we talked about the NHS one last week, in education, in the criminal justice system, these will be difficult to deal with politically, because they will involve tensions about, you know, what's the most effective way to spend money, how quickly can you increase capacity. And you then come back to the point, the question for the bigger question for the government, which is, you've got Brexit done, in inverted commas. You know, the UK is, you know, it has its trade deal with the EU, is out. What now is the purpose of this government? And Boris Johnson wants to stay levelling up, but levelling up, you know, I don't think anyone can look at the reaction to his speech on levelling up last month and not think that he needs to put more meat on the bone of that idea.
And yet we also at the same time have more reports that the government might have to dilute or U-turn on plans, such as the planning reforms, which I think, within the view of number 10, the planning reforms are part of that levelling up agenda. They think it will particularly help areas in the Midlands and the North and also appeal to younger voters. And you can see with social care too, the Prime Minister's preferred solution, that is seen as something which will appeal to the South more, though. Wait to see on that tax rise issue if national insurance is going to go up, but that's still seen as it. But it's one of the more expensive options. So in theory, if you have a property which is of higher worth, which is more likely to be in the South, then that is going to benefit you more. So I think you have a situation where, yes, Boris Johnson needs to put the meat on the bones of the levelling up agenda, but you also have a point where they're also worrying about other things. So there isn't exactly that razor-like focus on it. It has to be broadened out, which is making it more complicated.
And Katie, finally, I wanted to get your opinion on this, because over the weekend there have also been reports that Uber and Deliveroo are going to be partnering with the government to give discounts to young people who get their second and then their first jabs. As someone who's already booked their second jab but haven't had it yet, you know, I'm feeling a bit peeved that I might be missing out on my discount. Maybe I should have been less well behaved. What did you make of the whole deal?
I mean, you could wait it out, given that your double vaccination will allow you to have without the quarantine is looking more complicated. No, but I think in all seriousness, it's an interesting one, because as you say, I think one of the reasons the government has been a bit reluctant and perhaps has initially gone for the stick, as we talked about on this, of saying, you know, you won't be able to do this if you're not double vaccinated, is because they didn't want a situation where you had lots of people who had gone forward for the vaccine early, who then felt as though they were missing out on things, some others who hadn't volunteered, but were all being told getting the vaccine is good for the, you know, society, not just yourself. But I think, having looked at schemes in other countries, which AIDS have been looking at very closely, so in terms of both talking about what you can and can't do, but also in America where they have had incentives, I think it's now the case where it's easier, I think, to go for incentivising, and it definitely upsets Tory MPs a lot less than talking about mandatory vaccines passports. Though ultimately, I think that if you have had your vaccine earlier, so it means you're going to miss out on a free Uber ride or a delivery lunch, you can at least take comfort that given COVID is going around as much as it is, you would be more protected for longer. So I don't think people should be crying too much, into their tea.
That's good to know. Thanks, Katie, and thanks, James.